Save big money and build the deck of your dreams now at Menards. Spend less time maintaining and more time enjoying your deck with UltraDeck Low Maintenance Composite Decking from Menards. It's easy to install, built to last, and you can get a free estimate fast with our deck design program in-store or on Menards.com. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at
Menards. There's a nationwide funding crisis that prevents teachers from getting the resources they need. That's where Donors Choose comes in. People like you can help teachers get funding for supplies and experiences their students need to succeed. Learn more at DonorsChoose.org.
Hey folks, it's Will here from the Hurling Pod. Just a little bit of a message before this podcast, which we've decided to unlock based on requests that came in from Off The Ball members to do so. So this is the members pod from last week. It's been up for around about a week now at this stage. It veers away from hurling conversation. There's a little bit talking about boss sizes, which was a question that came into us at the end of it. That's about all the hurling content that's on this one. It's more a conversation that veers off in different directions, as often happens when Murph and Skell start to talk in a meandering way on the members pod on many a week. But in this case, it's a lot about coaching, it's about parenting. Definitely it moves away from the idea of what happened just the week before that you'll often get on the main pod. If you want to get this every week, which is a bit of a taster for it as well, offtheball.com/join has got all the details there. You can get 3 free podcasts a month as well if you sign up on the Off The Ball app, particularly with Championship coming around. Maybe you might decide that you want to use the members pod for some of those free listens as well. My advice would just be, if you're out and about and listening, download the episode before you listen to it. You'll find it in the GA Plus feed if you're on Apple or if you're on Go Loud. And if you're on Spotify, it goes into the main stack, but you'll see it there as one of the locked pods as opposed to the unlocked pods that you see that are up for free. So hopefully you enjoy it. This is the members pod from last week. We'll be back on Sunday looking back on the league finals from Portiquive.
What a goal!
The League of Ireland is back.
Every Friday night, it'll be impossible to miss the League of Ireland.
Make sure you listen to the League of Ireland exclusively on Off The Ball.
Become a member now and join in the obsession. Subscribe at offtheball.com/join.
OTB's The Hurling Pod with James Skell and Paul Murphy.
You had plenty of support, Skell, with people complaining about the music, by the way. I'll leave in another second or two of that countdown, which I'm using as an edit break there. Kira Doyle was in contact on Instagram. She's like, I agree with Skell, the music was much better last year.
Yeah, that's I reiterate what I said. That's cat, the music at the moment.
not punchy enough for you, Skell, is
no,
it?
No, you asked me to give me an opinion. I give you the opinion. I just don't like it whatsoever. And plus, when it's 30 seconds long, it just feels like I'm waiting for bloody Vodafone or someone.
Yeah. I should have just for next week, what I'll do is, a bit of time later in the week, I'll cut something shorter, 10 seconds, nice punchy music, and we'll go from there.
Do you know the way that I know it's probably copyright and all this sort of crack, but so let's say Off The Ball starts with Arctic Monkeys.
Yeah.
Why, not to say that we'd want to start with like anything like that, but why can't we?
So YouTube are the problem there, really.
Oh, it's YouTube. Okay.
On the podcast side of things as well. So I think it goes out in the radio. News Talk, Today FM, commercial radio stations are basically signed up to, you'll hear about IMRO maybe. People probably heard about it from, oh, what the hell are the IMRO Awards? And basically, they're the people who do the return back to the artists from the radio stations.
Yeah.
Right. And so you have a commercial license to use music like that because you're obviously paying for it in a wider sense. And so therefore on the radio, you're perfectly cool. Arctic Monkeys, Work Away, who else do you use? White Stripes. It's funny, you can tell all the Off The Ball stuff was done by a production staff who were like mid-2000s yeah. music fans.
Who were at Oxygen back in 2006, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Like even when we were in Limerick, I found Adrian Barry's old playlist on Spotify that we put out before the guests came in. And the minute I looked at it, I went, this is definitely guys in their 40s who are listening to tunes 20 years ago.
Anyway. So, Will, if we went along, and let's just say, I'm just saying, hint, hint, if we went with like the Stone Cold Steve Austin, Broken Shattered Glass, that theme tune, who's going to find out about that?
Jim Johnson might find out through his spiders that are on the internet. The problem is, see, if we put it on YouTube, right, there's all sorts of algorithms that they use to find out if music is being used. It's why people have to silence music and whatever else if they're doing them on videos, and it can lead to a copyright notice.
And I don't want to do that to OTB. Because it could end all sorts of problems. Imagine they do a live show every morning. It's like, why did you go off? Well, we decided we were going to use Stone Cold Steve Austin's music at the start of the podcast.
Can Jeez, we try it? No.
It'd be a hard way, though. Like, if you consider a lot of people, we put this out like Sunday night. I say we will put it out Sunday night. And Monday morning, you're getting into the car, you're getting on the train. Like, I used to get on the train Monday morning, like, over the last few years. Trying the podcast, you're a little bit sleepy, standing on the waiting for the train. You have a coffee in hand at 6 in the morning, and then suddenly Stone Cold breaks over your headphones.
Yes,
you're putting. I say, like, oh, listen to the hurling back here now. Bang, blow the ears off yourself when you're standing.
Nice. Waiting for the train. Yeah.
So,
yeah, I mean, not to get off the beaten track in it, but his song from after WrestleMania 17, which people probably remember, actually got remastered and came out again a couple of weeks ago. Which is Disturbed.
Will, that is fair knowledge right there now.
Yeah, I know. A lot of people don't like Disturbed for political reasons over the last while. By all means, Google them and find out why. But Glass Shatters, which was the song that you might remember had the words in it. That one is after coming back out again. So he's very much back in the news.
So what you're saying is there's the chance.
There's a chance you might see Stone Cold at WrestleMania this year. Probably not us using the music.
And Murph, I just got an image there of a cat. Do you want to scare a cat? It jumps up like fuck. That's the image of you with the platform when the song goes on. Jesus, coffee going everywhere. All over
exactly,
your clothes.
So hold on. This bridges nicely in from the other pod, Murph. Do you listen back to the pod?
No, I don't. What I was basically saying, I actually listen to a lot of like crime podcasts and as I heard someone say the other day, a closet history nerd at times. No, I listen back to a lot of crime and history for some reason. Yeah, a bit of sport as well, but I don't listen back to the pod because I was there when it was recorded, so I don't need to listen back to it. So I don't. I was more referencing being in the position of the person who throws in the headphones walking for the train or getting on the train, and you like get your coffee, and then by the time you're in position, I'll throw on my little podcast here. But if it was Stone Cold from as soon as the doors open, like that's a bit drastic for 6:30 on Monday morning. So
it's a very, very fair point. I will give away the podcast that I've been listening to here in case anyone ever wants to follow me. Dan Carlin's Hardcore History, big fan of it. I've got a load of sports podcasts and I'll probably be giving out to for giving plugs to all those different sports podcasts. But I listen to a lot of them.
Yeah.
I listen to the Attitude Era podcast, which is a wrestling podcast. I listen to It's Raw, which is an offshoot of that, which is about Gordon Ramsay's Kitchen Nightmares, which is pretty good as well. And that's a few other wrestling podcasts I have along the way. Some rival GA podcasts I see have snuck their way in there. The Two Johnnies appear to have come up because I listened to the Catfish episodes. I think everyone probably did. Yeah, there are a lot of the ones I'm listening to recently. What about you, Scal? Do you listen to other pods or is this exclusively us?
I kind of listen to more, like, if there was a good guest on Joe Rogan, I listen to it.
Yeah.
I listen to Diary of a CEO.
Yeah.
An awful lot of kind of leadership, kind of coaching podcasts I listen to. I'd pick out certain people then if they were speaking, I'd go to that podcast. I love listening to the likes of, if Clive Woodward was speaking, I'd source him where he's talking.
Yeah,
and go towards him. Robin Van Persie is the same way. Have you heard him speak before?
No, I've never heard him.
He's been on a couple of podcasts. He doesn't host a podcast, but he's been the guest on a couple of podcasts, and he's been fantastic. Yeah. He's been brilliant, So, likes of him. And what was the last one in? There's one, a really good one, Coaching for Leaders. Really good.
I haven't heard that one.
Do
you know who was actually on that Diary of a CEO a few years ago that was like mind-blowing the depth he goes into? Johnny Wilkinson was on that a few years ago, and it was...
Was he on the CEO, or was he on the one for the top sports people? Do you remember that one? The name just left me right now, Murph.
I'll double-check it here now. My phone in front of me. I'll double-check Diary of a CEO, Johnny Wilkinson. I'm fairly sure it was Diary of a CEO. Whatever it was. Now, you could be right. It could have been like the top sports people. But he went into levels of psychology that I'd never heard any sports person
High Performance Podcast. I listened to that.
That's the one, yeah.
That's the one he was on. And he, when I was listening to him, right, on that particular one, Murph, I was like, sweet baby Jesus.
Yeah.
This guy is psychotic.
Yeah.
The only thing that's ever happened is Matthew McConaughey. Have you listened to him speaking?
Yeah.
He's very interested.
Jeez, he's deadly. Yeah.
Now, I'm just checking, actually. Wilkinson was on the Diary of a CEO as well. So, look, I don't know. I don't know at this stage which it was, but yeah.
The point being, same. Yeah, he's psychotic in terms of his prep.
Yeah.
Imagine he noticed that, again, going off topic, excuse me, when he was with Newcastle Falcons, he had this inner, he used to call it the inner demon, whereby he felt like he was missing out on something. So he'd be in his clothes, a suit or his shirt, and he'd pass the gym and he'd have to go on the roar or pump out some weights, even though he was attending the game. Yeah. He'd go in and get a sweat on just for his own psyche. That's the level of
Jesus.
He'd be injured, let's say, right? Or he'd be attending the game. He'd be in a suit or in a shirt and slacks, and he'd pass out at the gym and he couldn't feel. He hadn't enough in himself to walk past it. He had to go in and hop on the rower or hop on the weights machine and start pumping up a sweat and then come out.
Yeah.
He says, I'm drowned.
It's like, Jesus. I listened to Jackie last year. Actually, he was on Thomas Niblock's podcast last year.
And I listened do like to that him podcast on that. Too, yeah.
Yeah, oh, it's great. Like, I think there's Thomas Niblock and Oisín. Like, it's the sultry northern accent that just gets you in there. You can listen to it all day. But the Jackie on it, he was saying that before going to bed most evenings, I didn't notice, he said he'd do like 20 push-ups and 20 sit-ups before getting into bed. Now, otherwise, some people do that in the morning. But Jackie said on the podcast, he said he was just so, I suppose, driven or demented, I don't know what you want to call it at that stage. But he says he remembers, like, you know, he felt he wasn't being accountable if he didn't do that before going to bed. But I can't remember where exactly he explained he got it from. Like, why?
Bodybuilders do it, Murph. So bodybuilders would do it for their arms.
So before bed.
Bodybuilders would have done that, let's say, for their arms, their biceps and triceps, yeah. Pump the shit out of them until they can't move and then hop into bed. It was something to do with heart rate and growth that it was super. So that was...
That to me sounds like Jackie was just saying, though, I'm going to do 20 more than anyone else is going to do it because I'm going to do it just before I go to bed.
Yeah.
And I'll make sure I do these.
And that's what it sounded like. I mean, it didn't sound like he was trying to grow the arms or anything. It just seemed like that he almost, not to say I had to punish himself before going to bed, it was almost like that he was squeezing everything out of it, and that somewhere along the way, some metric along the way, he decided, you know what, this is something I'm going to do to be accountable every time I'm going to bed or something. But I'm fairly sure in the podcast he said he'd be getting into bed and he'd be roasting, like he'd be sweating, getting into bed, which is never comfortable when you're doing it.
No.
So there you go. You found out what podcast we all listen to now, which wasn't expected. The cliffhanger that we left things on, Skell, because you went, no, it's a whole podcast in this. Don't even dare ask that question. We need to go here. Mm-hmm. Was I saying, do you ever watch back your own performances?
Oh, God.
So, well, the floor is yours here.
I can safely say I've never watched back any performance.
None of them?
Sorry, that's a lie. The only performance I ever watched back was the first half of the 12 at Ireland. Yeah, I just don't.
But are you saying you don't watch back any matches, or you just don't watch back your performance?
I watch games. It takes me ages to watch games because I'm constantly rewinding, recording, taking numbers, etc. But in my own games, whether it be club or county, I just don't watch them. Hmm. My mindset is like that. It's done. Whether the result is a win or loss, it's just finished. It's done. On to the next.
Hmm.
So like, I've never seen one of our losses in terms of the Ireland's. I've only watched the drawn game in 12 because I felt like at the time it was because there was a replay coming for the first time.
Yeah,
I was ever involved in a replay. I was like, it irked me. I felt like we lost it in the first half. You know, and so that's why I had to find out what did we do. And yeah, we lost it in the first half. So I don't watch them at all. Nothing. I've never seen any game I've lost.
So it's not about psychologically being too tough then. It's more a case of you just think it's done. It's in the past. I'm not dragging this back up again.
No, it's not that I'm not dragging up. I just think, what purpose is it going to serve me to watch a game that I know the result of? Regardless of outcome.
Would you not look at it from like an enjoyment point of view, 2017, for example?
No, I've not watched it. Yeah. Because I'm very much in the real time. You know what I mean? The real. So my memories, let's say, are real moments, let's say. You know, real feelings and real emotions, whatever, when that final whistle went, etc. That's where I'm. That's what's in my mind space. Just like the last, the same way. And I don't want that. So, like, it's grand. It only brings me back. If I watch that game, it brings me back to where, I suppose, you could say, it could bring me back to where we were at the final whistle. Just like you would have, Murph. But
yeah.
I can just sit here right now and think of, I could bring myself back to it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I was just thinking, though, say if, look, he got to a final this year. Say if Capitaglia were to get over the line and win a Galway championship. And everyone kind of goes down to the pub and sits down and watches the replay of it, or a couple of times during the week it gets played in the background. Would you not take some enjoyment from sitting down and going, right, we've got to this pinnacle of what I really wanted to achieve. Let's just sit down collectively and enjoy the game. Would you not be able to do that?
If for that kind of moment, that particular instance, I'd sit down, no problem.
Okay.
Because it's on, it's there, I'm there, I'm present, it's part of a collective. But if you're asking me, would I go home, sit down, put it on in my television by myself? Maybe not. It doesn't bother me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just wouldn't. Yeah. Whereas, let's say, you could get someone like my mother who watch every single game 5 times and they want to talk to you about it 10 times. You know what I mean? So I'm very much present moment, and then it's done, park, next.
Yeah.
It's slightly psychotic.
Yeah, no, it's not, because I find this interesting because, again, it's going to be coming out in a while, so I think I'm okay to say this, particularly in a member spot. So I sat down for about 2 hours with Sean O'Gahalpin last week in Cork to have a bit of a chat about his career, and we talked about his post-career and so on. And again, a bit like that, it wasn't so much his own games. He actually didn't really go to watch Cork games when he'd retired. He said that he found himself not really going into Park Queen. I know you talked about it before, Murph, and he said even his experience was a little bit different, that like he just kind of likes watching the games at home. He likes kind of watching them by himself. He doesn't really like the idea of being in a crowd or getting distracted. And he was saying that he was perfectly comfortable with the idea. He said he would have been nowhere near Croke Park last year for the final with Cork and Clare if it wasn't for the 25-year Jubilee in 99. It was only purely because that was the only reason he was there. He said if he was at home, in all likelihood, he would have had Radio 1 on the background. And he would have been working away in his wife's cafe, serving people. And he would have had no problem just like listening to the game and not even watching it.
Yeah.
He said he found it really strange. It was like he'd given 20 years, a bit like with Emma Horgan earlier. I think he gave 16, 17 years as intercounty senior hurler. He'd been on minor teams, under 16 teams, hurling football, had given his entire life to it. And he just went, I'm done for now.
Yeah.
And it's only really in recent years he was saying that he got back doing a bit of training with Napiercig, with the youngsters, and with the North Mon. But up until that, he said he didn't really miss it.
Yeah, well, like it's, I think it's healthy for some people to go off and get the hunger back. Like it, like you dedicate so much time to it, but it's in a very high performance area. So like when Sean Ogg was playing, like, I mean, he was ultra dedicated. He was in a zone and he very much had one goal in mind. That was to be the best version of himself that he could be within the team, essentially. But there's nothing that replicates that away from that specific thing. So like when players step away, you kind of have to recalibrate. You really do. And an example I give recently, Kilkenny played Tipperary. I did off the ball. A lot of lads over the last years have been asking me, like, what, you know, how is the punditry going and all this, and why do you like it? One of the reasons I explained to him is, like, I like it when I'm going watching a match because I can actually watch the match not being in the crowd. I can actually kind of get a good bearing for what way the game is going. I don't know if I mentioned on the podcast a few weeks ago, but, you know, turning left to right, or if John Fogarty to the left of you and you have whoever, Brian Carroll to right, and you say, did you see that the way I saw it? And it's actually a nice way to watch a match. But one of the players who retired, or let's say retired last year, the end of last year, I won't mention names or anything, but they rang me after the game because they knew I was at it, and they're like, you're out for a coffee or anything there, and met him down the town, found it very tough watching the game. And the big problem he found very tough was that sitting in the crowd, hearing what the crowd were saying about players while the game was going on, he found that extremely tough. And it was kind of very much from a point of view of that, like, you know, the ball would be thrown in, the ball would go down 30 yards, a lad would miss a rise in the first 5 seconds, and suddenly someone would erupt and abuse him. And you're going, like, you know, players are going to miss balls, that's fine, abusing the player, you know, and straight from the off, he found it very hard watching it. And I said it to him afterwards, I was like, well, you know, if I was going to a game, I wouldn't generally stand in the middle of the crowd or sit in the middle of the crowd. I generally go to the side because players, ex-players in particular, I think they find that very hard when they're transitioning to go, Jesus Christ, this is what people are saying about me in the stand, or this is what people are saying X, Y, and Z. Now, 80% of the people, 90% of the people in the stand are saying quite positive things or trying to encourage you, but you kind of hear the 10%. And like, there's so, now that's only one element of it. It's only one strand of it. But Martin Fogarty said it to me when I retired. He's like, he rang me and he said, listen, go to a game with somebody the next time you go, because you don't know how to go to games. Like, you go to games as if you're going to play. Like, which is, it was such a... It's such a wise thing to say to me. And I've said it to players since. It's like, you know, go with somebody to the game, but also remember you are retired. So maybe go to the game. And if there's an option to not be in the middle of the crowd where you, you know, you often see retired players. It's why, I think it's why RTE can find them so easily in TG Cahir. Do you know, they zoom in on Brian Whelan up in the crowd, or they zoom in on, you know, Martin Story or someone, because they're not generally in the middle of the crowd because they want to actually watch the game. And I found that was a big thing. And I'd be interested to hear what Sean Oak has to say about it. But I've seen a good few players go off, retire from Kilkenny or retire from Intercounty, and you suddenly find them cropping up, you know, doing triathlons and doing different things because there's now this new lease of life, first of all, that they don't have to have the structure of being accountable to an Intercounty team and being somewhere 3 times a week. They also have this thing of, I need structure and I want to do X, Y, and Z. And then also the thing of, you've had so much of your fill of the inter-county scene that there's like, well, what else is out there? So it's interesting, whatever Sean O comes out with, it'll be very interesting to hear what his view on it was.
Yeah, I hope One Piece makes the final cut. I think it will, because it's a lovely little moment. But towards the end of the chat, I was asking about, you know, getting back involved with the North Monastery. And he was talking about how, like, things are not where they were. So when he was coming into school, they had won an All-Ireland not that long before it. And Donal O'Grady had been involved as one of the selectors, and he was his Irish teacher in the school. And they were looking at all these multiple All-Ireland winners that had gone through the school, and it was wonderful tradition and whatever else. And then he was saying they haven't been near a Hearty Cup in recent years. And that's kind of what they want to achieve, is to get back to that level again. And he said they got to a semi-final like a hammer by Flannans this year. But he said the enjoyment was they went and won a Cork Schools competition a couple of weeks later. And out of nowhere, Sean Oak starts singing in front of me. Just, we're in the gym with the film crew and a couple of producers, and that's it. Yeah. And he just starts singing the North Mon song. And I really hope that it makes it into it, because I could see the joy in his face as he was singing it, where he was saying he gets as much enjoyment out of trying to bring a group of lads between the age of 14 and 17 to be just better hurlers than when they first come in than he would if Cork were winning All-Irelands without him. Which is, there's kind of a, I don't know. I mean, look, Skell, you're doing coaching with younger players now at the moment as well. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know if you get that enjoyment, or does it feel more detached when you were a player? Because I remember Ron Nogara saying to me that, like, when he won with La Rochelle, they won the European Cup, doesn't compare it to being a player. He says, like, it's nothing like it. He's like, you can be happy for them, but I'm detached from it. How do you find it?
I suppose I was going to ask more after, like, say, what did your, I'll come to it in a second, Will. What did your inter-country career take out of you, mentally and physically? It's not a loaded question mark by any means, right?
No,
I'm just thinking, I asked the question because I'm saying, I wondered would he answer it in a similar vein as I would, right? And I'd answer this way, like, it took an awful hold of me, like, physically and mentally as well, because physical breakdowns and physical skills leaving, etc., that, and, you know, all that stuff takes a toll mentally, losses, all that kind of stuff, you know. So it took a lot out of me, and I was just thinking, maybe sometimes players just need a break from that. They need to use the word recalibrate, and maybe some players just need time to recover. That might be just a physical ailment, or it could be just a mental, you know, mind space, where they need just time just to breathe and get back into their daily routines, or get back into seeing people or socializing, etc. So I can understand people when they go away from the game, they leave it for a while because they need to just, again, recalibrate, recover, reset, regenerate, you know, and then get back into the game. So my perspective was, I just, you know, I felt I had more to give all the time to the game. Not as a player, but to the game. That's why I got into coaching. I love coaching, to be honest. I love coaching. I love looking at young lads and saying to myself, I can help that young lad. I can help him somehow. You know what I mean? There's a problem with him somewhere. And it could be something, you know, I love looking at young lads thinking he's got an issue somewhere. It could be in school. It could be he's free taken. It could be shot. It could be something. And how do I get him comfortable enough for him to tell me so I can help him? Do you know what I mean? And then we can all get better together. Because I know players, they carry different levels of pressure. You know, the pressure on TJ is way different to the pressure that's on Gareth Dunne, you know what I mean? Because of levels of performance and physical ability, to be honest, right? So I'm always looking at those. I didn't mean Dunne in that frame, but I'm looking at the players who are not on the first 15, maybe not on the first 24. How can I get you in step by step into the 24, into the 15, just by continuously trying to improve you? You know, and then that's kind of my ethos in coaching, right? And I will say, wholeheartedly, I have no problem admitting it, I'm a better coach than I was a player. That's definitely for sure. I think that for sure. Yeah. So it's like, I think I can help these young lads long term, you know, not just in the game coming up against Leash next week in the 20s. It's long term. How can I help them in, you know, career choices, you know, professional advice, etc., taking their whole approach and bringing them forward. That's why coaching gives me that kind of thing. It's not just focusing on a drill or an analysis piece or a match. You know, it's much broader than that. That's the way I treat it. And maybe some of the players, it's not for them. That's absolutely fine. They mightn't want that. They might think it's invasive. That's fine too. But I've had plenty of players come to me and ring me one-to-one because you've opened the door for them to do so. Do you know what I mean? So like a player, like I had a player ring me and he was struggling terribly mentally, you know. And this guy he's 19. Do you know what I mean? Mm. Like I'm thinking, geez, a 19-year-old struggling terribly mentally. Not because of hurling or anything, but just in general terms. I won't disclose why he was struggling. And the next thing he comes to me then recently and says, just the facility of being able to call you, right, has alleviated some of the pressures I'm feeling. Which is, I'm like, that's unreal. Now, don't ask me how I've gotten the topic, Will. how I went this way. But you know what I'm getting towards. That's why I find, that's an area I find fulfillment. And come here, if we win a Leinster Championship and win an Ireland Championship, unreal, brilliant in the 20s. But primary focus is how do I make these young lads better people, better players, better sons, you know, better engineers, yeah, whatever the case may be, etc., up along that they carry it forward, and that just, it's not just a small part of their life.
Mm. By the way, I don't think it's a strange thing at all, Skell. I think, look, the reality is, and this is, you, I know you love the numbers, there's going to be so many lads that flow through minor and under 20 teams and yes, probably never play senior. Yes. And they might never be the star that they hope to be at that stage.
Yes.
So that kind of guidance that you can give to make them, whether it be a better hurler or a better person, is actually probably far more rewarding than finding a guy shoot the lights out with senior anyway.
Well, look at this way. You take your job, Will, and take Murphy, yeah, your job. How much of your jobs, right, is personnel management and relationship? Huge amount, isn't it?
All of them, yeah.
Yeah, because you're all output-driven, production-driven, yeah, etc. And it's all about relations, you ask me. Same in my job, in context directorship. It's all relationships. So if you can teach these young lads how to be part of a team, how to lead, how to take instruction, how to be coachable, how to deal with adversity, how to deal with stress, you know, time management. There's a whole lot of different things, right? Aren't you setting them up for a great position, whether it be for their leaving cert, college exams, you know, enrollment in the armed forces, whatever it is. Do you know what I mean? Like, we have a guy now in the armed forces, he enrolled, Murph, and I'm telling you, he is, like, I'm not saying he was a bad person, right? But the guy he is now, right, to the guy he was last year, chalk and cheese.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
He's done that kid the world of good. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and sure, for a lot of people, it's direction, though, isn't it? Like, I know structure. Certainly for me, yeah, structure, yeah, and direction, this is, you know, like, when I went in first, I was either going to be in the Guards or was going to be in the Army. This is kind of two things I wanted to do. But I found my hurling went through the roof. What do I call it? Went through the roof. I was certainly hurling very consistently. Now, part of it was I was delighted just to be out at weekends and I was getting to go hurling, that there wasn't some lad shouting at me during the week. But there was definitely a part of it as well where, you know, you were just in a very good place where you felt during the week, Monday to Friday, you were achieving something, you were getting fitter, you were getting stronger, you were doing something that you enjoyed. It was robust, which was something for me. Like everybody, again, you know, as you were saying, Skell, or maybe you were alluding to it, was, you know, everybody ticks differently and they want to do something different. Some people want to do very academic jobs. Some people want to do jobs who, yeah, are a little bit more outdoors, like whether it be farming, whether it be, you know, military, whether it's, you know, whatever you're going to do. When you find that thing that kind of suits you, you know, I think your hurling and all that or your sport kind of benefits from that, you know.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. And like that fella you're referring to there, like, you know, probably has two sides of his house now in order where he's like, well, do you know what? I'm enjoying what I'm doing, my 9 to 5. And I'm also enjoying the hurling now. Both of them are complementing each other. Now I'm in a good place. And that's where you get the most out of the people then. That's where you get, yep, the most out of the lads, you know. So, yep, particularly with younger lads, because, you know, it's a tough place when you're 16, 17, 18, 19. Yeah. Do you know?
I can't imagine the trouble, not the troubles, but the challenges that are involved with social media being that age now. We never had that, Mark.
Ah, yeah.
It only came into us probably in our mid-20s, maybe, you know, give or take. Maybe you were before me, obviously, but you're more in tune to that than I am. But right now, when it comes with you from 14, it has its own challenges, right? So if you don't have a purpose or a direction, maybe you feel a bit lost, or maybe you feel a bit like empty or a bit useless. That's the honest words that you use, yeah? So, but I'm not saying that man did, but that man
you watched, have you watched Adolescence, by the way?
Yeah,
I have.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Yeah,
it's tough stuff, like, and I don't want to get into politicized because this has created a big culture war about, you know, whether the main character has been recast or why it's a white character and all this type of stuff. But I just think in a general sense, there is some really good points made in that around how parents find it really difficult to understand that. And again, I don't know whether we're maybe just that little bit closer maybe to the teenagers so we can maybe understand some of the language around it and so on. But like, it's scary for a parent. And Stephen Graham's obviously class, just his acting performance throughout it. But you know what I mean? Like, genuinely, even you've got like the investigating officer, and I'm not going to give any of the plot line away too much here, but he just doesn't understand the language of all this. Yeah. And the fact the kids are living on social media 24/7 now, which is so different, even to us. Like, I mean, when I first joined social media, it was a bit of crack to interact with people and people maybe that you knew in school or eventually knew in college or whatever, and you could chat away to each other. And that was it. It wasn't invasive at all. You'd put up an update every now and then, and it was a bit of crack and somewhere to chat maybe. Now, it's like 24/7.
Now the two lives, will you see? So now what I've learned over the last number of years is now that kids have two lives. So they have their online life and their in-person personal life. And their online life and personal life are not the same. They're chalk and cheese. One, it's hard to determine which one it is at times, right? One section has full of confidence, the other doesn't. And it's trying to determine which is which.
Mm.
That's what I found very difficult sometimes is trying to break, when I say break them down, you mean you're trying to find out really what they're about. You get me? But they might let you. You might have to source it online. Do you know what I'm saying?
Mm.
I honestly think in underage teams, maybe not in country, but we need to have coaches or personnel who kind of assess this stuff, are in tune with this stuff. I've heard of no coach or no professional who is really in tune with this social media stuff and how it impacts players or students or people in work, etc. So it was noted by us recently that we probably need to assess this on a more broader base next year when we have, you know, more resourcing, etc., because it's becoming so important and it's a huge part of their lives. Mm. Monumental. It is their life, to be honest. Straight up. It is, you know. Geez, this topic got very...
it's a great topic,
you see, because like nobody would ever hear us talking about this.
No, you know? Of course not.
No, they wouldn't. There's great content here, I think, for people to listen to.
Yeah.
Whether you're a parent or a player or a coach, etc., or a site manager, whatever it is. It's great content, this, because it's all relative. It's all the same tools.
I think as well, Murph, when it comes to players, right? So say you're a young player coming through at the moment. Once upon a time, and they always talk about this, that, you know, lads didn't read the newspapers or whatever. That was a few match reports. Mm-hmm. And maybe if there's a match report saying that you played badly in game X, Y, or Z, you could fire them away pretty quickly. The week is gone. Tell the parents not to keep the paper or whatever.
Yeah.
Now, there's anonymous forums. There's particularly, I suppose, Twitter is probably where a lot of stuff comes up. Instagram, you see the abuse that people get under. I'm always really aware of this, by the way, when we're doing this podcast, is that people in the comments underneath stuff can just go way overboard. We're thinking, there's absolutely no way I would walk up to that. You'd walk up to that player and say it to their face.
Would you get abuse online, lads?
Ah, yeah. Yeah, I got piled on last week for a joke.
Yeah,
that joke.
You're kind of going,
I think that joke, Murph and I can say this, and I'm not speaking for you, Murph. When you wrote that joke, I knew exactly what you meant. Exactly what you meant. And it was a joke.
Yeah, he meant Michael Garmacali, obviously.
Yes, exactly. What's the name of your man? I can't even remember his name. But but that people just don't see that because they're so, I suppose, sometimes blinded with extremism or bias. Mm. It takes over the logic. It just completely takes it over. And you've got the rest of it, I'm afraid.
Well, the thing as well was, right, I was going to address it at one point on whatever it was, Monday. It was a bank holiday. And there were obviously some people who earnestly went to it and were like, are you just drunk and you're bringing up about a player who's up in your court or whatever? And I was like, just take a second, read it back. And then as I went to reply to it, I went, there's no point. Because first of all, two things. Humor is always subjective, so never go and explain a joke or you've destroyed the joke anyway. And secondly, there was no point in kicking the hornet's nest that were people piling on top of the comments. They just let it play out.
Yeah.
And it finished and it moved on. And people found out, whether it be Conor McGregor or Garen Noone or whoever else they want to give out with the next day, someone else will be the topic. And I'm sure that's going to be the exact same for Garen Noone at some point when he reactivates his accounts and comes back on. But it is bizarre. And if you ever do get caught up in one of those storms, and sometimes you will get quote tweeted into stuff or whatever else, it's actually a little bit crazy. And for people who aren't able to deal with it and who aren't able to just read it and go, this guy's a dickhead.
I got one a few years ago. I don't know if I mentioned this one to you. I don't even know if we're doing... No, I don't think we're doing the pod at the time. It was during COVID. And do you remember there was not the riot in Dublin last year? There was a riot a few years ago during COVID. And there was, I think, kind of... I don't know, were they right-wing people up in Dublin and they were going a bit mad? But someone went to throw abuse at Paul Murphy, the TD, and they sent it to me. And I woke up one morning. I had this tweet from a fella. I think it was Jerry Larkin was his name. And he went, congratulations. And then my tag, I went, all your boys up in Dublin there caused hassle. And I just retweeted and went, I say you have the wrong Paul Murphy there, Jerry. But I was there going, as not only do people not even check, and then people, what actually happened there was people actually weighed in, including the TD weighed in, saying, oh yeah, he obviously didn't mean me either, etc. So there was people weighing in from all angles, but there was people jumping in on your man. There was people then who didn't notice that I was the wrong person. They were jumping in on me. And I was like, so I actually watched that play out because I was obviously going, well, if you're so hot-headed that you don't even notice that my profile picture is a player in a Kilkenny jersey with a green helmet. I'm not hiding who it is, you know. But that was funny. So I've got that a few times since. But I was able to look at that in a very small snapshot going, this is even aimed at me and this is mental. Whereas, saying... one thing wrong. It doesn't even have to be wrong. Sorry, it doesn't even have to be wrong. It just has to be misconstrued by one person and it's gone then. And then off it goes and you let it off. But it often does, it's sometimes a storm in a teacup online because it just moves so fast.
Like the common thread as well here, by the way, is Twitter/X. And don't get me wrong, I love engaging people on there and a bit of crack there and whatever else for the best part. And it's a great place for us to promote the pod and all that sort of thing. But the common theme is now that has become a complete and utter shit show. And as a result, if one or two responses are negative under something, I find they snowball really, really quickly. Because once upon a time you created your account, you had the people that you followed. I think most people by default are now in the not for, I'll just get this right way around.
Yeah.
It is the for you as opposed to following. And what happens is you're in for you, and that's the algorithm that is looking at things you've engaged with before, and it's going to push all sorts of shite down your timeline. And next thing, you're engaging with someone you don't know. And so therefore, you don't know that Paul Murphy's a hurler. You think it is Paul Murphy, the politician. And so you go and have a pop at him, or you see someone else is having a go. And it's just so much bollocks on there. And it's just people talking shite.
I've actually got to the stage where I don't go into the browsing part of it because it's a cesspit at the moment, to be honest. But I go into notifications just to see, is there anything actually anybody tweeting us about this? Because it's like, well, if people are putting questions or whatever, you know, we screenshot them, we send them into the group, and we let people, we might trash them out in the program. But like, I don't even go to that page or that part of Twitter now because it's mayhem. And maybe what it is handy for as well, like, is like, I didn't watch the match of the weekend, Watford and Offaly. Mm-hmm. So when I was going looking for James Mahan's tackle, I was like, oh, it's very good for that. But if you're going scrolling, whatever with the other apps, it's a bad place to go scrolling because you won't sleep at night. You go demented, you know? So it's,
Well, even if you were to scroll just the James Mann thing, by the way, if you just put a search in, right? So you've got the combination of sack all the referees, start punishing referees.
Yeah.
Dara Fies went down like he was shot. He should be suspended. James Mann actually did hit him, and I'm the contrary opinion, and actually it should have been a red card. Absolute nonsense. They really need to rewrite the rule book. Just all in a search. If you just put in about the red card, you'll see all that. It's just like, again. It's tiring at times.
Could be so worse.
Our podcast is better.
My my for you is riddled with farming and the Patriots.
That's good.
Yeah. That's one is going well so far. One's not going well.
I think your algorithm is pretty sorted, to be honest.
It's much better. I get pictures of cows and calves every day. I love it. Then I put up one then myself.
I get politics, I get culture wars, I get all that type of crap. And that's obviously my own fault for engaging with it in the first place.
Well, I was told a phrase before, lads. A lion doesn't lose sleep over the opinion of sheep. So
that was Marcus Aurelius, I believe.
Doesn't bother me.
Oh, look.
Write it down. Write it down. As my uncle says, write it down.
Could have been James Gale, could have been Marcus Aurelius. We're not quite sure. An unusual members pod, I must admit, this week. Should we throw some hurling in towards the end of it? I know, obviously, we're going to do the prediction next week.
I hold the hurling for next week.
No, I agree. No, I'm not going to go into it. Who's going to win between Tipperary and Cork at the weekend to come? Whatever. That's very much for next week because that is going to be required stuff.
Actually, go on. Sorry, Will. I interrupted you there. Murph, you raised a great point about the boss. Great point, Murph.
It wasn't. I had a very concerned cousin this morning. Again, I was doing a few Sunday jobs, and suddenly one of my cousins, I'll name him Tim. Tim just texted in and he was like, what's the story with the size of the boss?
You're supposed to know.
Exactly. Like, no, he actually, so this is the family, this is the Murphy WhatsApp group. I'm not even sure if Tim listens, but his first question, I'm going to open it up here now and just have a quick little look. His first question was very much like, when are you doing the next pod? As if like we're an authority on anything. So you had a big ream of a message about noticing the size of hurdles last night, the bosses and different things. And the question was, when are you on Off the Ball or podcast next, Paul? That basically, I want this issue.
So we put it behind a paywall, so he can't hear it. Go on.
Yeah. What was very good was he put up a picture of Shane Kingston posing. It's obviously for a Sports Direct ad or something like that, so you can quite visibly see the shape of his boss. He then puts up a ruler measuring a hurdle that he has from the house, off the shelf star hurdle, which measures at 17.5 centimeters. And then he puts up a picture of Johnny Pilkington from about 1988, I would say, with a hurdle measuring, I would say, about 11 centimeters in diameter. Yes. So, yeah, in fairness, his point was just that, like, there's a rule that actually says it has to be 18 centimeters, but that players, and I think that's very much accepted. It's not even that it has to be debated. There's a lot of players that have it much bigger than that, particularly at inter-county level.
Was there not a clampdown at some stage in this, Murph? I remember this becoming a big topic at one point.
Clampdown and everything.
I know, but they were practically using goalkeeper hurdles at one stage. And then I remember everyone was getting them refined down. And then the bamboo hurl was becoming popular.
And
it was the synthetic one. And there was all sorts of arguments about, you know, weights of hurls and whatever. But the boss size was definitely clamped down at one stage.
I'd say, right, I guarantee it, if you wanted to do a year-by-year chronological of what rule was clamped down and what year. So, like, if you go back, right, remember the time Dermot O'Sullivan used to get the ball swapped? The towel would come in, he'd swap the ball for this, like, this rubber ball from out in Pakistan somewhere that would go flying 100 yards. And the lad coming in with the towel was nearly going to start to be tackled by the referee. That was being clamped down on. The size of the boss of the hurl, face guards was another one. Then lads were going without the bar and the face guard. It was going to be dangerous.
Yeah.
Progressively, standing outside the box, keeper standing one step outside the box, that was one that eventually got a bit more traction. Hand pass. Grabbing the face guard. 21-yard free, where he allowed sure, Stephen O'Keefe was nearly killed by Anthony Nash one years. So, like,
not to get off topic, but two of them being called in the Galway Cork game was quite surprising. I saw someone had tweeted this earlier on saying, when are you going to talk about the fact there were so many thrown hand passes? It was part of me kind of going, do you know what? The game of Parky Weave, I saw two of them being pulled by the referee, which is more of a rarity than anything.
I had to laugh at Ger Kenning yesterday when he said that.
Which
when the throw was better, he goes, that's a rule that's been clamped down heavily this year. I'm like, sure. What are you watching?
There's been five in the league.
Yeah.
I think there's been three we can probably remember. The one with Kyle Hayes, the two at the weekend, and they're the three everyone's going to remember.
I think there was, though, Will, you were saying there was, I think, a little, it was very marginal, a little clamp down there once, but I don't remember it like to the extent of, do you know the way
officials walking in with a tape measure and just double checking before he came out?
Yeah, the tape measure for the hurls and then the spirit level for the shoulder. That'll be the new one. But
does anyone, and you've obviously used a bigger boss scale along the way, but part of the reason the goalkeeper sometimes didn't have the one with the massive boss for the puck out, like, is there a huge advantage by having a much bigger face on the boss of your hurl?
No, it's not. It's all timing. Half the team in Capitagal have a bigger boss than I have.
Right.
Half the team have, They have, and it's actually written on the hurley. You'll see it. I think it could be a Torpy brand or a D. It says big boss.
Oh, right.
So there's a specific brand or product that's termed Big Boss.
Okay. You know,
BIGBAFS is how it's spelled, I believe. I think it's an OD hurley. I could be wrong.
There was a good few goalkeepers a few years ago who had either a Cool Tech or a Torpy because they felt that there was more torque almost on it for a puck out. These newer style synthetic materials. So therefore they were using that, but they were using a different goalkeeper hurl. I don't remember the bosses being massive on them either, though.
They weren't. They're very small. They're probably 4 inches, by 110 mil. But with the Cool Check, man, you could, if you caught it, it would travel, right?
Oh, yeah. But to direct, there's a spring in it, yeah.
Yeah, but when you try to direct it, it'll go anywhere.
Do you know, now I'm absolutely open to be corrected on this one, but I'm fairly sure, 99% sure, all the Cool Tech hurls are based off Richie Hogan's hurl that he used in the Leinster semi-final against Offaly in under 21 2008.
This sounds like the wonder bat. He had it broken out.
Morph. I love every information.
Every single one of them. Cool Tech or Offaly, would be correct in saying that?
Yeah. Yeah.
Your man was at the game. He was on the sideline. Richie broke his hurl, fucked the half the hurl away. Landed in front of your man. Your man picked it up, went off, used the template. Every single Cool Tech hurl that is that template. And it was Richie Hogan's half. It was the boss that he used that night, under 21 versus Offaly in Tullamore 2008.
Jeez. Did Richie get a few quid for that, though?
He didn't, his bollocks.
Do you know what brings this round beautifully full circle, by the way? That game in 2008 was the same night that I'm pretty sure The Dark Knight Rises came out.
I am
pretty sure.
My favourite film.
I went to the game.
Sorry, useless game of trivia alert, but go on.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure I went to that game because it was an early evening game because there was no lights in Tullamore and I was on TG Car, I'm pretty sure, as well. I'm pretty sure I covered that game and then a group of us in work went to The Dark Knight Rises afterwards.
Oh, what a great
day it opened. It was a Thursday night, I think.
What a great evening.
Oof. Well, I don't know. Off he lost to Hurling, but
The Dark Knight Rises.
We certainly won with Batman. I'm pretty sure that was the same night, 2008. Yeah. Again, I'm sure people will correct me on this if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure we went straight from O'Connor Park to the cinema after the game.
And your man, the director, said that the first scene in Dark Knight Rises is the best scene he's ever done. Your man Cameron, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah. Oh God, what's his name? No, Nolan.
Nolan. James.
Christopher Nolan.
Christopher Nolan. Sorry. Yeah. He said it's the best scene he's ever done.
It's pretty class.
So the one where
it's the heist,
the plane, they're on the plane.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
You mean the one after that. So yeah. No, I meant the one before it. So hold
That's
on.
That's not the Dark Knight Rises.
It was the Joker. What's the Dark Knight? The one that came out in 2008. The other one was the year after, I think, wasn't it?
Dark Knight Rises. That was 3 years after, wasn't it?
That plane scene is class, except for Aidan Gillen. I really like Aidan Gillen, but sorry, his accent is fucking stupid.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Yeah, as long as he's an Irishman or a CIA agent or American. Yeah. Anyways, see, I told you. When we have this podcast, we can go in any direction.
It brings it back full loop, though. I'm fairly sure I've told a story before about like 2014. Aidan Gillen was in the crowd. Like, I'm a big Lovehead fan.
Yeah.
And after the final in 2014, I'm nearly sure it's 2014. And like the crowd hung around, we got the cup and whatever. And like Aidan Gillen got great seats for the All-Ireland final in 2014. He was he was down close enough to the front, but he's standing there. And he kind of always has that, like he has that Aidan Gillen head in him, kind of half threatening. Like, do you know what I'm saying? Like he's quite menacing looking character, probably sound out. But I love hate, like, and I think it could have been in the midst of watching it at the time. Granted, his character was dead at this stage. Next thing I turned left, I went, Jesus, there's John Boy, I love hate. Obviously, I knew it was Aidan Gillen, but like, you just don't expect to see him there, like, you know.
That's how I know you're not a Game of Thrones fan, by the way, because for anyone else, he'd be middle finger from Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
Never watched Game of Thrones.
Oh, my God.
Oh, this might be, and here's the worst part. This might be a Father Ted versus Game of Thrones thing. My only worry is that the last season of Game of Thrones hurt me so much that when I see it on TV at this stage.
Because it was bad, was it?
Oh, it went off the rails entirely. But I can't watch it now. And I've had friends who've asked it to be recommended. And they were like, geez, you were big into Game of Thrones, tricky towards the end of it, whatever.
Cersei, what a bitch. Oh, Jesus. And there was some bad stuff. Like, I've never in my life got up off the couch and wanted to put my fist through a television. That's Cersei. Oh, Jesus. Or Murphy, you ever going to watch it? Do you reckon?
No.
Okay. So, do you know when...
Will grimaces after he says...
I'm here going, Skell does the Red Wedding here.
How do I explain, you know, the Night King and the Dragon Crystal? How do I explain this?
Oh, no.
Oh, my God. I don't even know how to explain it.
The Night King and the Dragon Crystal.
Yeah, so for people who have watched this, right, the Night King gets killed, right? And basically, there's a whole build-up to this. At least 6 seasons of it are about the Night King. I would say since about season 2 up to the last one was a big build-up. And everyone thought Jon Snow is going to kill the Night King. And he's going to fulfill the prophecy and all this type of stuff. And it turns out that he gets stabbed in the heart by Arya Stark as a nice little twist.
Yeah.
I remember staying up to watch that episode.
But it was with my housemates. Well, it was The Move. Remember The Move?
Oh, it was so bad.
Oh, jeez.
Remember she dropped The Move?
She dropped a dagger basically into her hand where it looked like she had actually been caught by the neck and he was about to kill her. But then she dug the... Sorry for spoilers for someone who didn't see this 8 years ago. Who basically stabs the Night King and then he disintegrates and all of his mates disintegrate. And it's every kind of... fantasy, you know, like every trope of a fantasy is, oh, if you take out the head of the main one, it just all falls apart. And it did. Okay. And this creeping threat for 6 years all disappeared in one moment. And you went to bed going, that was a bit mad. Because it was 3 o'clock in the morning when it finished. And then the next morning, I actually woke up angry about how it had gone down.
I woke up angry. Jesus.
I had to go to work the next morning. I got up early and went, I've had about 4 hours of sleep. And I'm not at peace with what has just happened. And then the whole rest of the series was shit. It was like everything.
I got off the couch. Yeah.
Oh, man.
I got off the couch and I said, yes! I seemed like he's dead. The bastard is dead. Do you know what I mean? And I was like, no, where do we go from here?
There's another 6 episodes left and they've just done what you're in the brain.
Winter was coming. That's what I meant.
Oh, yes.
Oh, man.
Anyways, Mark, sorry. That's
The first few seasons are well worth the watch.
Oh.
Yeah, but it's like one of those things. Remember, like, Lost started off and it was like this great program because a plane had crashed on an island. They're all on a desert island. It's all great. And then they went, right, this is so good. You have to ram another 7 seasons in before we eventually close this off. So then it just becomes bananas. There's polar bears on the island and it's like meant to be in Hawaii and stuff. And I was like, gone now. I'm gone. This has gone crazy. So now I'm just after pulling the pin. Like, I watched the most recent things we watched, like Yellowstone. Mm. Brilliant. Like, just cowboys. Like, lads going, class. Like, you'd want to buy a cowboy hat after it. Like, it's class. Was there any other ones that are like pretty good, but like they just didn't go away from the point? You're like, listen, if you have to kill everyone at the end and it's only four seasons or whatever, do it, but just make it good and that's it.
Yeah,
you
know?
Lost was doomed, and Lost was doomed for one very good reason, and I've got good memories of it, or good times with Lost, so I don't want to be too angry with the way it ended. That we watched it in college and it was on RTE at the end of the weekend, and oftentimes we would be back in the apartment ready to watch it and we were so excited. And then you go into college the next day, and these were like, you mightn't have necessarily had internet in the apartment where you were living, but you went in, you read forums and you read different things, and people were going, well, actually, the fact that there was a, you know, red was the colour that we were focused on there indicates this is all going to wrap around brilliantly. And Lindelof and all the boys have got the perfect idea of how this is actually going to finish. And then it turns out to be a lot of fucking bollocks at the end. It was like, for years they said, it's not going to be purgatory. It is not going to be purgatory. We've got a much better idea. We're going to, you won't believe it. Once we get to the end of this, we're going to tie it all in. And then it turns out, they're actually all dead in the plane and it's purgatory. And you're there going, this is bollocks.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it at the time, but it ruins everything in retrospect.
I don't say it. You just feel conned, like, you know.
Breaking Bad is the way to do it.
Is there ever bar Breaking Bad now? Actually, that's a great question. Is there ever a series that you've been happy with, like the ending? Like Line of Duty, I thought was one that would definitely have the best, most intrinsic ending ever, and I was like, that was bollocks too.
Succession was perfect. The end of it.
It was perfect. Yeah, you're right.
I can make peace with that, and I'm so glad they didn't do another season or two. They had an end point and they got there.
Yeah, True Detective was very good.
Yeah,
True Detective is very good. Yeah,
True Detective season one is amazing TV.
Yeah, great acting.
I'm going to bring it back to Love Hate as well. Like, I just thought that finished really, like what I thought I loved about Love Hate was the fact that they didn't try and butter it up. Right, they're like, this is what happens in like crime in gangland. Like, there is no winners. Like, you know, everybody is going to end up a loser here. And like the way they just painted that picture, now it's meant to come back though. Apparently, your man John Connor says it's meant to be coming back. Start of next year, whether it does or doesn't. But like, as far as I was concerned, it finished.
Really, I don't see any reason for bringing it back. That's the thing. Like, I felt like the story kind of reached a point, didn't it?
It's a dangerous game to bring it back because it's that thing of revisiting it. But
the danger as well is you do something like Kin. Oh, you know, like
dangerous game, bringing it back.
Yeah.
I thought you meant dealing narcotics is a dangerous game. Yes,
but it is. You don't need me to say that on a GAA podcast.
I was like, what? Yeah, obviously.
This is going to be terribly misinterpreted after my MDMA joke that we actually endorse drugs. Yeah. I heard someone saying that was like, you do realize that you're making little of something that destroys families. I'm like,
get out of here. No. Jeez.
But I can't think of another. I'm trying to think of another. I can't think of anyone else. That was Bodyguard. I like Bodyguard, was pretty good. Glenn Rowe. I don't even know how that finished.
I have no idea how it finished. I hope that it was a case of Miley got revenge on Dick Byrne or something by the end of it.
I don't know.
I had no idea. I the only thing I can remember about Glenn Rowe was obviously, first of all, the feeling of it before he went to school the next day, and Miley having the affair with Fidelma.
Yeah.
Like, that was the central premise of it. It was like such a disgrace that a man would ever have an affair on his wife. And I've no idea where the rest of it goes.
Your one flipped her car then. That's Jesus, Miley's wife's name.
Oh, yeah.
She flipped her car at one stage anyway.
Oh, yeah. She was driving behind an agricultural vehicle, as I recall. She went to overtake and then...
Yeah, a big big budget for RT to flip a car then as well.
No, 87 Cortina.
That was I think it was hiring the stuntman for the day was a big problem, but anyway.
Oh God, I need to get you to watch Fatal Deviation at some point. Have either of you seen it before I even recommended it to you?
No, how is it?
Oh, you love Fatal Deviation. It's the only Irish MMA movie, or sorry, Irish Kung Fu movie, I believe.
Ah,
this could be
anything.
It's on YouTube. It's about an hour long. It's not even that long.
Fatal Deviation class.
Deviation. Let's watch Fatal Deviation at some point.
I typed into Google here, and the first words that come up is low budget.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's just the whole point. The reason it was in my mind was they do a car flip scene in that, and it turns out the car flip scene was not actually meant to be a car flip scene. They got the guy who was playing the main character to drive the car, and he crashed. And they left it in the movie.
Yeah, geez, of course you leave it in after damage is done now.
Pretty much. It has Mikey Graham, not the Galway football coach, but the Boyzone.
Yeah.
I believe he's called Michael Graham as an actor. He put Michael at the end of it. It's so bad, but it's so bad it's good.
I'm all for it.
The fatal deviation is the ultimate trick in Irish kung fu. Right, gentlemen, that has been a strange podcast, which has brought us to fatal deviation.
I enjoyed it.
What a way to sign off. The fatal deviation is the ultimate move in Irish kung fu.
The good news is for...
I'm just thinking, well, like, can you imagine, right, if we had this type of podcast, right, and next thing we bring it into a pub or whatever and have a few pints and then go on a podcast, what are we going to talk about? Like? Where are we going to end up, like?
I don't know, but like every week, I mean, I was looking at the Spotify and definitely there was a couple of tweets there as well, which are like, have you decided where you're going this year and so on?
We have to decide soon.
I think people would probably come out and watch it anyway.
Let's go to Cork.
I think we should definitely go to Cork.
Screw it. Let's just call it now. Any hotels in Cork that want to bring us in, just let us know.
Give us a shout.
Yeah.
It might not be under the Hurling Pod moniker. It might be just the three of us using our real names, but we'll see you there. Right. Paul Murphy, it's been a pleasure.
Thanks very much, lads.
James Scale, you're going to love Fatal Deviation. It's still on YouTube, I'm pretty sure. I'm sure whoever owns the copyright, they've just forgotten it's up there.
Yes.
Thank you, guys.
It's terrible quality. It's about 240p, so you'll enjoy it. Right, gentlemen, thanks a million. We'll see everyone next week.
See you.
Save big money on your next project with help from Menards. Be prepared for flooding and keep your basement dry with Barracuda Sump Pumps. Barracuda makes high-quality pumps that offer dependable performance for when you need it most. Save big money on all Barracuda Sump Pumps now at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money.